From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Just days ago, the unprecedented move to cancel events that might draw more than 100 people came from executive order out of the North Carolina governor's office. This statewide mandate is now enforceable, yet it's hardly the most extreme measure officials have taken to slow the spread of the new coronavirus, known as COVID-19. Each day seems to bring a new restriction. Schools are now closed across the state. Restaurants and bars have shuttered their dine-in or drink-in services, with takeout options available for those businesses that choose to use it. People have reported lines at stores such as Costco, as store staff limits the number of people allowed in at one time. Public libraries, the museum, the battleship are all closed in New Hanover County. On Tuesday, North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper announced new economic relief for workers and business owners affected by the shutdowns, including lifting some restrictions on applying for unemployment benefits and declaring employers not responsible for those benefits paid due to COVID-19. The goal of all these restrictions is to slow the spread of the virus so medical systems don't get overwhelmed. As of March 18th, there are 63 presumptive cases in North Carolina spread across 18 counties. Brunswick County has one of those cases, as does Onslow County. So far, New Hanover and Pender counties are at zero. There has been a run on toilet paper, disinfecting wipes, paper towels, water, and dry goods, although suppliers say production hasn't slowed down. But officials say that run is emblematic of public anxiety over the coronavirus. There's much we don't know, due in part to lack of widespread testing, especially since people can carry the virus and exhibit no symptoms. Today, it's an unusual edition of Coastline. For the first time, all of our guests are joining us remotely by phone. I've never sat alone in the Coastline studio during a live show. Even with remote guests, we always have at least one butt in the seat, as I like to call it. But it's important to paint the picture for you, our listeners, and demonstrate that as we report this news, we are in fact heeding the recommendations ourselves. We suspended the pledge drive after a day. We have shut down the WHQR offices, and those who can work remotely are. Only a few people actually come into the station on a daily basis, and that skeleton staff includes Ken Campbell, Coastline's engineer and HQR's Morning Edition host. Today, we're taking a wider look at the community in the Cape Fear region, and we'll find out what options are available to people now, what myths about the coronavirus are still floating around, and the new information we have about it that changes almost daily. Joining me now, Art Frampton, PhD, is an associate professor of biology specializing in virology at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Jessica Loper is chief communications officer for New Hanover County, and Philip Tart is director of public health for New Hanover County. They all join us via the phone. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you
for having me.
And if you have questions for our guests or if you're a local business owner, you can tell us how you're dealing with the new restrictions or stay-at-home parents. Send an email to coastline@whqr.org. Art Frampton, let's start with you as the virologist. Where are people at the most risk? Now that schools and restaurants and bars are closed, does this mean we'll be spreading the virus at the grocery store or the gas station?
Oh, thanks. Good question. Well, as I always tell my students, viruses love a crowd, right? So that's why we're encouraged now in the age of COVID-19 to practice social distancing, right, as much as we can. So limit your exposure or potential exposure to the virus, especially if you're older or immunocompromised or have underlying conditions. The virus is spread person to person through respiratory droplets, and so if somebody is coughing or sneezing, you can breathe in those droplets, or you can touch those respiratory droplets that contain the virus and touch your face, your nose, or your eyes and become infected. So the more you can do to distance yourself, stay as far apart from people as possible, the better you're going to be able to protect yourself from being infected.
Well, that leads right to the question about how long the virus lives in those droplets on surfaces.
Yeah. Good question. Well, recent data, there was a paper just released yesterday from the New England Journal of Medicine, a study that showed that the virus is fairly hardy for an envelope virus. Most envelope viruses degrade rather quickly when they're out in the environment. But these coronaviruses have been shown to persist for 2 or 3 days on hard surfaces like metal or plastic. So it's advised that people, you know, clean surfaces, clean doorknobs, disinfect as much as possible because, you know, again, you can touch a surface that contains the virus and then, again, become infected that way.
Now, I think one of the scarier elements of this situation is that people can be completely asymptomatic and mm-hmm. still carry the virus.
That's correct. Yeah, so 80% or so of people that get infected will have no symptoms or just mild symptoms. But it doesn't mean that they aren't infected and they're not, it doesn't mean that they're not shedding the virus into the environment, right? And so you could have somebody walking around, you know, feeling perfectly healthy, not realizing that they are releasing virus into the environment that somebody else could become infected with. And now, you're most contagious when you're symptomatic, right? That's when you're shedding the most virus. But again, you can shed virus even when you're not showing overt symptoms.
Jessica Loper with New Hanover County and Philip Tart, we appreciate both of you taking the time to join us today because we know how busy you are just in getting the news out and answering questions for the public. But help us understand what the testing options are for folks who are concerned that they might be positive.
Sure. I want to first say we've got a call center set up for the community to ask these same types of questions. We've got public health nurses on hand, a mental health counselor on hand. That number is 910-798-6800. So any of these types of questions, our team is going to be able to help and point people in the right direction. In terms of testing, a lot of what we're seeing is folks coming to public health, and we can either refer them to a practice, a urgent care location that will be able to do a flu test if they're exhibiting the symptoms, or someone can go to their primary care doctor. Right now, there's sort of two levels of criteria in terms of being tested for COVID-19, and this is based on state guidance as well as CDC guidance. But if somebody has traveled to a location with active COVID-19 cases or have come into contact with somebody that has COVID-19 and they're also exhibiting fever or lower respiratory symptoms, that can be when they get a COVID-19 test, as well as if they are just having a fever and those respiratory symptoms and they test negative for the flu. So that's a really important distinction in terms of making sure that the right people are tested. That flu test is needed currently. And so public health is able to refer people to places that have that rapid flu test available where they can get that done. And then that physician can order a COVID-19 test if that rapid flu test comes back negative and there's no other diagnosis available for their symptoms.
So the Philip Tart.
Thank you, Jessica. And we want to make sure that individuals take the opportunity to call, whether they're coming into the provider or they're coming into the public health agency, to call prior to so preparations could be made to simply alleviate some of the stressors on staff and other individuals. It'd be nice to have an opportunity to do a triage prior to them coming in and then really give some good direction to limit the spread if it is a COVID or a flu at the same time.
Now, one of the reasons that there's testing criteria in the first place is because there is this shortage of tests. Can you talk about that? Is there any talk about testing being expanded to a broader range of the population?
So certainly, I think we've certainly had conversations amongst our community partners, so that is an ongoing dialogue happening now. Testing does have its limitations based on, or at least sampling limitation based on supply. At this time, we are being told that those supplies at some point will be available moving forward, and we feel right now we have a decent number of supplies. That the idea of doing drive-throughs and things of that nature, if that's part of the conversation, we could get to that point, but again, it gets back to the supply chain. We'll have a better handle on that as we move forward, but right now I think the process of at least having them utilize public health and their primary care physicians is our best course of action. But again, it is a fluid, dynamic situation, and that could all change this afternoon. We could see a significant amount of those testing supplies available moving forward. So, but we're going to explore every opportunity to ensure that we at least sample the folks that we know are sick and get them to, into the areas where they need to be treated. So we're constantly talking about that.
Sure. That's Philip Tart, New Hanover County Director of Public Health. UNCW virologist Art Frampton, you talked about how people are more likely to be contagious if they are exhibiting symptoms of COVID-19. But what percentage, and this, I guess, would have to come from the data from other countries, what percentage of people who test positive for coronavirus have zero symptoms? And obviously, you'll have to answer that when we come back from this break.
Sure.
You're listening to Coastline. It's Coronavirus Today with New Hanover County's Chief Communications Officer and Director of Public Health, as well as UNCW virologist Art Frampton. When we come back, we'll also hear from some listeners. Tell us how you're adjusting, either at home or with your work or business, during the coronavirus shutdown. Send us an email during the live Wednesday discussion at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. As the number of presumptive COVID-19 cases continues to creep up in the United States and North Carolina, venues that hold more than 10 people at a time are shutting down, and people are struggling to find information about the pandemic. Today, we're talking with two new Hanover County officials, Philip Tart, Director of Public Health, and Jessica Loper, Chief Communications Officer. We also have UNCW virologist Art Frampton. All three are with us by phone. And we want to hear how you're dealing with the shutdown. Do you have a small business? Are you staying home with your kids? Do you have a question for our guests? You can send an email to coastline@whqr.org. And Art Frampton, just before we went to break, I asked you about the percentage of people who test positive for the coronavirus who actually exhibit no symptoms.
Sure. It's kind of hard to get a really good number on that because of the lack of testing. So if we're not testing the general public, right, if you're not symptomatic, you're most likely not going to request your physician give you a COVID-19 test. We do know that about 80% of those that are infected, they have really mild symptoms. But it's really hard without testing, you know, large numbers of people, you know, what that percentage of asymptomatic cases would be. So I think that, again, is another reason we really need to do the best we can to kind of ramp up testing to kind of get a better picture.
And Art Frampton, is there evidence? I mean, when you look at South Korea, for instance, which has been held up as a model for doing this,
sure,
well, is that partly because they have had widespread testing?
Exactly. Yeah, they got out in front of this where they were testing thousands of people a day. So they really were able to get out in front and get a handle on do all of these contact tracing, you know, who's infected, you know, who were they in contact with, and try to contain the virus that way. We're in the stage now here in the States where we're more about mitigation, right? I think, you know, containment is we're less concerned about containment because the virus is in all 50 states, right? It's more about mitigation strategies. You know, how do you break those chains of transmission, you know, social distancing, right? Starve the virus. Don't allow the virus to find susceptible hosts. That's where we are now.
Right. There was a post on social media, and I'm not going to identify the poster. I don't know if this is a true story or not, but I thought it was emblematic of something. Sadly, yesterday, this person writes, "With all this craziness about the coronavirus, I came across an older woman in a panic trying to buy her water and toilet paper. She was literally shaking." And then he goes on to talk about what he did to calm her down. But Jessica Loper, are you hearing about panics like this? And what activities are being driven by fear right now that are not helpful?
Yeah, I think we're all seeing that. We're seeing store shelves cleared out, people trying to hoard items. And our main message to the community is, please don't panic. Be prepared. We have three ready NHC pillars, and that's make a plan, build a kit, stay informed. Do have water and non-perishable food on hand, but you don't need to take every single roll of toilet paper in a store because your neighbor needs that too. Take what's right for your family to, you know, have a kit for the next week, but don't hoard supplies, and don't panic. A lot of the measures being taken, those mitigation measures, the community guidance, those are to protect our community. It's not to cause panic. It's to make people understand that this virus is real, and one of the biggest ways that we as a community can combat it is to follow those mitigation measures, to stay home, stay away from folks who are sick. Practice that social distancing of, you know, no more than 10 people in any gathering, as well as 6 feet apart from one another. Those are really, really important measures, as well as those hygiene measures, you know, washing your hands frequently and often. Don't touch your face. You know, make sure that you, if you're a business owner, you're cleaning your doorknobs and railings, all of those places where people frequently touch. Those need to be sanitized. But as much as people can focus on facts and not fear, that's going to take you a long way. We've got a website set up at health.nhcgov.com. It's got a lot of really great information, and we've started putting some of those rumors on that page. So things that we're hearing consistently from social media are going to be put on that page more and more. It's a really good resource for people, and I really encourage folks to go there. Go to the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services website or the CDC website. Use trusted sources. Don't just believe everything that you see on social media. That can take people down a rabbit hole of fear, and we want to try to avoid that as much as possible.
And we also want to be careful on this program about even talking about rumors that aren't true, just because we don't want to reinforce them. But is there anything, Jessica, that is just patently untrue that you just keep hearing that you would like to debunk right now?
I think we hear a lot that there are confirmed cases of COVID-19 in New Hanover County, and that is not true. We do have tests that are pending, and one thing I can tell you is that if one of those tests come back positive, the community will be informed immediately. We are going to make sure that everyone is aware as soon as we know. So we're not holding anything back. If we get a positive test result, the community will know. And so as of right now, there are no confirmed cases of COVID-19 in New Hanover County. We've also heard things like New Hanover County is closed, so people can't get into New Hanover County. That's not true. A lot of our operations, some of our facilities and attractions are closing, but there's a lot of innovation going on with our staff in providing virtual services and drive-up services. So we are trying to operate in this new normal as much as we can and in keeping with those social distancing measures.
Okay, and in a minute, I'm going to ask you about some of those virtual options. I know a lot of that's in development, but there are some things that are out there now. But first, you mentioned planning for this. It almost sounded like what we tell people in preparation for a hurricane or severe weather event. How do we plan for this in terms of the timing? How do we know how long might we have to hunker down?
And I don't think we know at this point. You know, the guidance continues to change. I think most recently it's up to 8 weeks plan not to have those social gatherings for the next 8 weeks. And so that's really what we're planning for. At this point, though, we don't see grocery stores completely closing their doors. So there's going to be a source of food and supplies for folks over those next 8 weeks as of where we are today. Now, again, that could change, but we want to impress upon people that, you know, plan for that next week or so, but don't feel like you have to plan for an entire 8 weeks of quarantine.
And that's what we've been hearing, is that there has been no slowdown in the food distribution chain or the supply distribution chain, except the testing supply distribution chain. But NPR reported on food distribution and notes in this report, slaughterhouses, dairies, and vegetable producers say they are open for business, ready to feed the nation. However, Howard Roth, president of the National Pork Producers Council, says telecommuting is not an option for us. We are reporting for work as always. So when we project out, and again, we don't want to panic, but we want to be smart and strategic, is the supply, the food supply, if workers start getting sick, something we need to be prepared to see drop off?
Rachel, I really do think that, again, I go back to the conversation Jessica's had where hoarding should not be an option. But when you think of suppliers, yes, there could be an opportunity for staff to be sick. What we would encourage them to do, much like we are requesting for everyone else, is to have those plans in place so maybe their staff, maybe they do work a shorter staff schedule. Maybe they do distance the individuals within those houses preparing those foods, products. But at the same time, ensuring that their staff are well so they can continue just like we will with the county to provide services to whomever that customer might be. So it could be a highly likely probability for that to happen. But again, we're sending the same message to those producers, suppliers, to ensure that their staff are safe so they can continue to provide those services. So I don't think it's just for those in the room here and on the air. It's actually for them as well. And I do think if we follow some of those guidelines that Art was talking earlier, we can alleviate a lot of those issues we could potentially have seen had we not acted as soon as we did.
Right. We are talking with Philip Tart, Director of Public Health for New Hanover County, Jessica Loper, Chief Communications Officer for the county, and Art Frampton, Associate Professor of Biology, PhD at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. He specializes in virology. What questions do you have about the coronavirus, the disease itself, or how it's affecting the Cape Fear region? How are you adjusting to some of these new community restrictions? We can take your question or your comment during the live Wednesday discussion via email at coastline@whqr.org. Susan writes, if someone is placed under mandatory quarantine off-site, not at their home, who pays their living expenses? The quarantining agency, the quarantinee, or their health insurer, she asks. Philip Tart?
Yes, ma'am. So we have, Rachel, we have methodologies under public health law that talk about quarantine and isolation. Quarantine specifically when someone is suspect, isolation when we know they have something and we want to keep them away. We have traditionally never paid for services when someone is quarantined for whatever reportable condition they have. I do know we are having conversations within our community now, our faith-based community, our local provider community, on how we might impact those individuals that have nowhere to go and they are without homes. But typically for someone that is quarantined in their own home, and right now we're only looking at voluntary quarantine for those individuals that traditionally, we have never provided those resources for them. But there are conversations in the community about how we might utilize some other agencies to possibly help with that. But that is in the works as well. So that is not going unnoticed either.
Okay. Yeah, and if I can add, the New Hanover Disaster Coalition is talking a lot about ways they can serve the community, things that they can do to bring volunteers to deliver food for folks who may need it. So those conversations are going on, and people can find those resources on the Disaster Coalition's website as well.
Okay. And Jessica, I want to note, you've mentioned a bunch of resources, including the New Hanover County Call Center that's just set up to deal with coronavirus. And at the end of this discussion, we will post all of these resources on our webpage as well, linked to this show on Coastline, so people can find those. Dee writes, I'm a real estate appraiser and I'm working in strangers' homes every day. I've had conversations with homeowners to confirm I'm diligent with all the recommended actions to prevent COVID-19. I've had great response from everyone so far, reassuring me they're also practicing good habits and self-isolating. The interest rates are so low, she writes. I anticipate my workload will not slow down. Please revisit rules for allowing appraisers into homes and preparedness for these appointments. Any comment there, Philip Tart?
I would say that I would just continue to follow the guidance of proper hand washing, social distancing. Those are the best habits and guidance that we can give at this point for those close contact individuals that are working with people on a daily basis. And I don't think we will change that message yet. It is still fluid, but those are still going to stay the same as we would do with flu season or any other time where we've got a highly contagious virus that spreads again so easily.
Yeah. And we can take your question or your comment during the live Wednesday Coastline discussion via email today at coastline@whqr.org. Katrina Knight, Executive Director of Good Shepherd in Wilmington, writes, our team is working diligently to continue providing uninterrupted services to our hungry and homeless neighbors. We've had to make some adjustments, like serving lunch to the community as a to-go option outside the building. About 90 homeless adults and children are currently being sheltered with us. Our volunteer corps, she writes, is largely staying home because of age or vulnerability, and our food donations have been reduced to about 25% of our needed daily intake. We're hopeful that we will be able to continue rallying around our most fragile neighbors who need us now more than ever. Do you think, Jessica Loper, there could be some sort of centralized location for a volunteer corps for people who can't go to work but could help with something like Good Shepherd?
I hope and I believe that Good Shepherd is already connected with the Disaster Coalition that I mentioned before. They're doing a lot of great work in bringing a lot of different community partners together. Our concern is we don't, and I know you're probably speaking figuratively, we do not want a big group of volunteers coming together at any point. That would obviously go against our social distancing guidance. But helping to provide those resources to a lot of those different nonprofits, absolutely. That's one of the reasons the Disaster Coalition was formed after Hurricane Florence, is because we saw a gap in our community and a real need for coordination among all of these nonprofits who are doing incredible things but may need volunteer support and may need other assistance. And so Audrey Hart there at the Disaster Coalition has done a really good job of helping to bridge that gap. And I think that they are working actively in the community to make sure that volunteers can be connected to places like Good Shepherd.
Right. Now, UNCW virologist Art Frampton, this is a question that we've heard discussed a lot, but just for the record, help us understand why this virus is so deadly. If it's in the same family as the common cold, why does it kill people so much?
Well, that's a good question. Coronaviruses constitute a fairly large family of viruses. Originally isolated human coronaviruses back in the 60s, and up until 2003, all of the coronaviruses caused mild cold-like symptoms, right? Nothing severe. It wasn't until 2003 when we had the SARS coronavirus that killed up to close to 800 people. And that was a zoonotic pathogen that jumped into humans from civet cats, originally in bats and then in civet cats and then in humans. And so anytime you have a new virus that humans have no immunity to, right, they're going to be more pathogenic, right, until they adapt and evolve in humans. And so 2003, we had SARS, and then in 2012, we had Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, another highly pathogenic coronavirus that was transmitted to humans from camels. And so now we have SARS-CoV-2, which causes COVID-19, and this virus, again, jumped from animals into humans and is we have no immunity. There are no vaccines. There's no antivirals. So it's just going to run through the run through the human population until we can kind of get a handle on it or again, mitigate the spread of the virus.
Why? So that's why it's so efficiently spread then, because, partly because we have no underlying immunity. There's no base, immunity base in communities. So are we thinking now that there will be a seasonality to this? Will it drop off?
That's a good question. It's kind of too early to tell because it's just been here since December. It originated in China in December. And so we really have to wait, I think, for a whole year until we see whether or not it's going to dissipate and with warmer weather and maybe reappear again in the fall like we see with flu. We just don't know yet.
You're listening to Coastline. It's a community coronavirus discussion with UNCW's Art Frampton and New Hanover County's Jessica Loper and Philip Tart. We want to hear how you're coping with the situation. You can send us an email at coastline@whqr.org during the live Wednesday discussion. When we come back from this break, we'll hear from some more listeners. It is the last segment, so get your question in. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. COVID-19 has created a global pandemic. In North Carolina, bars, restaurants, entertainment venues, some gyms are closed. We're sorting out the myths from the facts today with UNCW virologist Art Frampton, New Hanover County Public Health Director Philip Tart, and New Hanover County Chief Communications Officer Jessica Loper. And they are, of course, joining us by phone. And we want to hear from you. How are you adjusting your life to the new limitations? Are you working from home? Have you been laid off? Are you a small business struggling to adjust to restrictions on hosting members of the public? Tell us about it with an email at coastline@whqr.org during the live Wednesday, March 18th discussion. And I want to read part of a text I just got from a friend who is stuck in London. Says, not trying to get back because of the issues through airports. She says, I get that some people have no choice. Lockdowns are moving in a wave across Europe, as you will know. So we expect the same shortly. In the absence of my usual exercise, I'm learning to skip like a boxer until it's time to drink gin. So that's how someone in London is coping who happens to have a home here in the area. Bob writes, is walking on the beach a good idea? Is virus killed with sunshine and fresh air? Art Frampton.
Sure. Walking on the beach is great. Any kind of physical activity. Again, just like you would anywhere else, practice social distancing, right? Try to stay 6 feet apart from others. Sunlight, will break down. If the virus is exposed to UV radiation, right, that's going to destroy the nucleic acid of the virus and render it non-infectious. So, sure.
Gareth Evans, executive director of the Bellamy Mansion, writes, obviously Bellamy's closed. Pleased to see museums and other institutions across the area do the sensible thing. We now get to do some long-term to-do list projects. But he writes, it's clearly going to be hard for nonprofits, as well as restaurants and many other sectors, with no income for however long this lasts. And of course, Jessica Loper, we heard from Governor Cooper yesterday that he's lifting some barriers to applying for unemployment for workers and won't penalize employers for some of those benefits paid due to COVID-19. But are you hearing talk of larger assistance for some of these nonprofits?
I haven't heard anything as of right now, but I know that it's on the radar of both our state and federal government. And we're already discussing things locally that we can do, not necessarily pertinent to nonprofits, but our health and human services operation is open. And so residents who need help, whether it's emergency assistance for heating and cooling costs or child care costs, Medicaid or food and nutrition services, they can call our health and human services number and they can help them sort of navigate that process if they've never done that before. So we want to make sure that the community knows that we're here and we're trying our best to offer services in this new normal that we find ourselves in. But I do think that in the coming weeks, there is going to be, you know, an outpouring of support for nonprofits and businesses from our residents who can, you know, do small things like purchase gift certificates and make sure you're still, you know, going through a drive-through when a restaurant is offering that versus coming inside. So still finding ways to support our nonprofits and our business community will continue to be top of mind. And we've already talked with the Chamber. We're in constant contact with a lot of our economic development partners to make sure they're aware of the county's efforts and that we continue that communication so that when this does subside, we have plans in place and we can help our businesses, our nonprofits, and our community as much as we can.
And I've heard that idea about buying gift cards or gift certificates from small businesses to help them get through this time. And that is a good idea. Brett is asking, if someone has the virus and is asymptomatic, will they be contagious for a full 14 days? Art Frampton, or Philip Tart?
Yeah. Again, you're going to be most contagious when you're symptomatic. So most likely you're not going to be contagious for the whole 14 days. Again, we need more data on that. But if you're not symptomatic, you're not coughing and sneezing, you're not releasing that virus out into the environment like you would if you were symptomatic. So there's less risk of becoming contaminated or infected from somebody else if they're not symptomatic.
Philip Tart?
Yeah, absolutely. We really like folks that have been fever-free over a certain period of time. That's been an opportunity for us through the years. For this one, I know CDC is recommending a 72-hour, a full 3 days, without fever and without medications that reduce that fever. So it's not as if you were taking Tylenol or some other reducing medication. It's the full 3 days without that before you even begin to think about that you're not shedding that virus. So That's Dr. Frampton's point. You really are at that most contagious level to others during that significant portion. But right now, we're looking at a 72-hour fever-free, and again, that's a full 3 days. So, but there's still more to learn about this virus going forward, and that could change. But that's where we are encouraging people to be at this time.
Right. Brett is also asking us to restate the new Hanover County call center number. Jessica, do you have that handy?
I sure do. It's 910-798-6800. And right now it's open, and it will be open at this time, Monday through Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 6 p.m.
And I have an email now. This has come up among couples who disagree about the precautions and the necessity for shutting down some of these things. We even, at the governor's press conference yesterday, heard a little bit of pushback from a reporter who was asking about, the legality of, for instance, telling churches that they can't congregate. But perhaps, Art Frampton, you could address why officials are taking some of these what seem like extreme precautions when, as of Wednesday, March 18th, there are no presumptive cases of COVID-19 in New Hanover County. There is one in Brunswick County, and there are 63 statewide.
Sure.
Why? What benefit is there? And do you think this is hysteria?
I don't think it's hysteria. I think the thing we have to think about is that, again, we haven't tested as much as we should, right? And so even though we haven't diagnosed a case here in New Hanover County, doesn't mean it's here, not here, right? And so this virus is fairly contagious, right? The data shows that if you're infected, you're going to be spreading the virus to two or three contacts, right? So, again, that social distancing is really important so that you're not spreading it to two or three other people who then go on and spread it to two or three other, you get this exponential increase in the number of infected cases. So again, anything you can do to mitigate that spread is going to be beneficial and is going to be important. Again, I think, you know, the testing, the data we have on the number of cases is lacking right now. And you see, the more we test, the more cases we find.
Yes, and there was a report, the New York Times was reporting on a new Harvard analysis that shows many parts of the U.S. will have far too few hospital beds if the new coronavirus continues to spread and nothing is done to expand bed capacity in hospitals. And these projections are showing 60% of adults across the United States having coronavirus. Tell us that's not going to happen. I mean, that's not what we're expecting, right?
Well, there's best case models and worst case models, and usually it's somewhere in the middle, right? And the one thing you have to think about is that's not necessarily a bad thing if more people, you know, get infected, right? At least younger, healthy people, because you're going to recover, you're going to become immune to the virus, and you're going to be immune from reinfection.
So we do know that? Do we know that if we get the virus, then we'll develop immunity and we wouldn't get it again?
Sure. If you have a perfectly healthy immune system, it'd be highly unlikely that you would not be immune after a natural infection. And so you're going to see in the population, you're going to establish what we call herd immunity, right? And where more people are immune to the virus, so the virus has a hard time finding new susceptible hosts that it can infect. And so the higher that percentage of individuals that are immune to the virus, that is when you're going to see the number of cases drop off.
Are we then, when we see people catch a cold and then a couple of weeks later get infected by another cold, is it a different strain of the virus? Is that what's happening?
Rhinoviruses, you know, there's over 100 different rhinoviruses, right? And there's many different viruses caused the cold. Rhinoviruses, coronaviruses, you know, there's multiple different viruses. But with this coronavirus, right, this SARS-CoV-2 that causes COVID-19 is just the one strain. Now, it's an RNA virus, so it mutates, right, similar to flu mutating and HIV and all, you know, all viruses mutate. RNA viruses mutate a little bit faster than DNA viruses. So it is mutating, but we're only concerned with one strain right now, right? And so it's not as if we're going to have 100 different COVID-19 strains that we're going to have to build immunity against. So if we recover from this infection, we'll be immune from reinfection with this same virus.
Terry writes, my husband lives in Charlotte. I'm here in Wilmington. No children. We get together on weekends, so I'm wondering how vigilant we need to be regarding distancing, sanitizing, and intimacy. At a minimum, can we kiss each other hello, or should we not worry about contact? Philip Tart?
You know, for us, even going through the social distancing piece, you still have families in the unit. You still have relationships in the unit. Again, for that aspect, I would say if they're both on the ends of the spectrum following guidance to ensure that they themselves are healthy, and protected, that will go a long way for them to be together when they can. So, again, it's about what are you doing outside of the home? What are you doing in the home? How are you cleaning? But certainly, certainly following the guidance for themselves wherever they are. We're definitely not telling anyone that they can't be home with loved ones. That's just not practical. I just think following those proper protocols are going to be very important. And I'd like to also add to Dr. Frampton, I mean, he's talking about the healthy immune systems and those individuals. You know, really the process here is for those folks that don't have those immune systems and they don't have those great protections. So for individuals that for some reason feel like, well, it doesn't affect me, well, if you're a carrier, you certainly could affect someone else. And I think that's a critical component. It's not just for you. It's for those other people around you that do not have those protective layers within their immune system. So I just want to get that point out there. So it's protecting your neighbor as much as it is anything else.
Sure. Art Frampton, did you want to jump in?
No, that's exactly right. You know, I'm sure everybody's seen reports of, you know, younger people not developing severe disease. And, you know, it doesn't mean that people, younger people, healthy people aren't infected. They are. They just don't develop these more severe disease and die from the infection at the rates you see with older people and those with underlying conditions. But as Philip Tart says, right, you're going to serve as a carrier or a vector for transmission of the virus to those that may be immunocompromised or have underlying conditions, and that's where you see the real problems. Those are the people then that are going to be hospitalized, and those are going to put a burden on the healthcare system, right? And so we have to be we're kind of all in this together, right? We have to be vigilant and do our part to social distance and to protect our loved ones and our neighbors.
Jamie writes, I volunteer at Mother Hubbard's Cupboard at 73. I'm afraid to work there right now. Clients often come when they are sick. Hunger trumps illness. Wondering if there's a plan to make volunteering there safe for us. Again, that's a tough one, Jessica.
But yeah, and I think you would need to reach out to that nonprofit specifically to ask about what they're doing in terms of their safety and preventative measures to know if that is appropriate. From what we're hearing, though, is anyone over 65 is really in the most at-risk category, as well as those with those underlying health conditions. So as much as anyone over 65 can practice social distancing and stay home, we don't want people to be socially isolated, but we do really encourage folks to stay home as much as they can. Seek alternate ways to be social, seek alternate ways to potentially feel like you're giving back, and that may mean supporting the nonprofit through a donation versus actually going in and volunteering.
Right. Now, we're getting low on time here. Super quick, Miles asks, if a person contracts coronavirus, will they be able to care for themselves at home?
Sure. Again, if you don't have severe symptoms, if you have typical cold-like symptoms, stuffy nose, low-grade fever, but you don't your symptoms don't progress to shortness of breath, for example, if you're short of breath, then you know you most likely want to seek medical attention. But if you just have normal cold-like symptoms, you know, do the same as you would normally: take acetaminophen, right, fever reducers, drink plenty of fluids until you feel better.
Okay, and Art Frampton, looking into the crystal ball, which I know you don't have, when do you think we'll see a peak in cases?
Oh, it's really hard to say. Some models, as Jessica was saying, have us, having to, self-isolate, think about 8 weeks from now. And so the models are kind of, all over the place. But I would suspect at least for the next month or so, we're going to be in this kind of new normal state, right, where we're doing the social distancing, trying to stay as healthy as we can, and
right,
trying to do our part in preventing transmission of this virus.
And that's this edition of Coastline. All the resources we discussed on the show we will post on our website at whqr.org, including, Jessica, some of those virtual options for people that we didn't get to unpack here. Jessica Loper, Philip Tart, Art Frampton, thank you all so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thanks, Rachel.
Coastline's production team is led by Rachel Keith and includes Ken Campbell, Doc Jardin, and Marissa Castrino. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org on the app or get the podcast. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.